Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to this very special mini-sode of Banging Book Club. I'm Hannah Whitten.
I'm Lena Norms.
I'm Lucy Moon.
And we have Riyadh with us today.
Hi! I'm Riyadh Khalif, otherwise known as Riyadh K, otherwise known as Random Dickhead off the internet. Am I allowed to swear on this?
Yes.
I've been called...
Swearing is recommended.
The one thing I'm called consistently is a clickbait cunt.
Ooh!
But I like to think that my clickbait...
CBC? Yeah. So we're like BBC because we're Banging Book Club. You're
yes.
CBC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm into
Done.
It.
That was a high five for everyone.
Yeah.
It wasn't a dick slap.
Like, dick slap. Just like, boom. Oh my goodness. So last month we read Aristotle and Dante Discover the Secrets of the Universe, which was about two 15, 16-year-old boys who are dealing with their family and masculinity and their friendship and actual love for each other. And it's beautiful. It's fucking stunning. Oh. And we invited Riyadh to come on Banging Book Club for this mini-sode because he recently has been presenting... Well, not recently been presenting. That was probably a while ago that you filmed it.
Yeah.
But your TV show, Queer Britain,
yeah,
is out. And it's all out now, actually.
Yeah,
the whole thing is available.
Yeah, as of yesterday, the last episode, six of them, all of our babies are out there. And it's really amazing. It was... almost a year in the making altogether, from like the pitching process to then shooting, editing, voiceovers, promotion, and now it's all out.
Amazing. And I just finished watching it this morning.
Oh.
And also good. And
thank you for watching it. I always say that. Now people come up to me on the street about the show and the only thing I can think of to say is thank you for watching it.
Yeah.
When someone comes up to you about your YouTube channel, it's a very personal thing. They're looking into your life, but this is like a professional work, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, thank you for supporting my art.
It always feels like a nuisance in a way because it's like not on their usual platform. It's, what, 6 half-hour episodes?
Yeah.
So it's like 3 hours worth of content.
It's quite a lot to get through.
Yeah, yeah, but all the episodes are on YouTube, so you can watch them at like 1.25, 1.5 speed.
Don't take Hannah's.
Hannah's a very busy woman, but I wouldn't recommend, you know.
Literally, yeah. I need to watch all of these and this is going to save time.
Producers and editors have been editing in those well-timed theatrical pauses.
Yeah, with the music and even my pauses, I'm like, and how did that make
you feel? The millennials, am I right?
I still got all of the pauses. They were it was proportionate.
Concertinaed.
I get you.
So there's 6 different episodes. What are the different themes of each episode?
So each episode looks at a different aspect of LGBTQ life in the UK, different issues. So we've faith and sexuality, mm-hmm. we've body image and body shaming, we've racism, porn, homelessness, and the last that was a really difficult one to film. And then the one that just went out yesterday was a synopsis of the entire series. And sort of like, what is queerness today? Who identifies as it? What it means? How it's been reclaimed? And
I think the great bit about that episode was an acronym. Is that the right word?
Oh yeah.
Of it. So should we?
LGBTQIAAP. Yeah.
What do you reckon?
What is
LGBTQIAAP.
Okay.
We've got the hands up.
The Hermione. There are 2 T's as well.
Okay. Queer.
Oh, there's 2 T's.
Okay, we'll try again. LGBTQIAAP.
Okay. We can tag team this.
Okay.
So
let's
gay, bisexual, trans.
Trans what?
Transgender.
Yeah. The next T.
Transsexual.
Yes.
Okay. And then queer questioning.
Yes.
Yeah. Intersex.
Yes.
What else? What?
Asexual. And then there's another A. Agender?
You are it.
Yes!
No!
You
ally!
Ally!
Oh, you're an ally.
I got really excited about that.
I was like, aroused?
What then, are you, Lena? I'm always aroused.
What's the P?
Pansexual.
Yes.
Yeah. Ding, ding, ding. I was really confused by the two T's.
Yeah.
Really interesting.
Because, so transgender is like gender identity, and then transsexual is if you've had like a medical sex change.
Yeah.
Is that what the difference is? Which, but isn't transgender like the umbrella for both of them? Anyway, I don't know.
Well, isn't that also a...
But you know, there's also a plus after all of those. So it goes on and on.
Do you know this?
We're going to have to do that.
Because we only learned recently, I think, that there's a lot of scope in the discussion of like what is trans and what isn't trans from various right-wing groups all the way up to like little thinkers through the Lacey Green stuff.
Oh my god. So allies are included in that abbreviation. Yes. How do you feel about that? I don't know how I feel about that.
I feel great. It was actually only today I got a tweet, and it was a group of gay guys discussing whether they wanted that A in there. And they said they don't agree with it. And I didn't want to get involved because, you know, these things online, they can just blow up. But I think it's great. I mean, I wouldn't be where I am today and as confident as I am today without my allies by my side. Hannah is one of the strongest allies I know. And her normalizing my sexuality day to day when I'm around her makes me feel great. Mm. It makes me feel like I can do whatever I want, you know.
Yeah, I do feel weird about it, though.
Do you?
Like, I think if I was with, like, some of my queer friends and they were like, yeah, ally, you're, you know, that's in it, you're one of us, essentially, then I'd be like, okay, cool, like, in this circle, we're okay with that. But then I wouldn't then go around being like, there's an A in it, it's for ally, and I'm in it too, include me. I've not experienced the same, like, marginalisation that you've experienced.
Well, you have... You try to understand as best you can and support as best you can your queer friends. And I look, for me, they're just fucking words. It doesn't really matter, does it? And I think anyone who's getting stuck up and weird about, you know, who can and can't be in it, it defeats the purpose of the whole thing. It's like, it's meant to be accepting and open, and anyone could be, you know.
Yeah. I think it's when what comes after the abbreviation. So if it's like, if we're talking about LGBTQ issues, then I feel weird having an A in there.
Yeah.
But then if we're talking about so the
community,
the DUP are against the LGBT community, then I'm like, yeah, you are against us. If you're against one of us, you're against all of us. So I think it's like when you need like a drawbridge being drawn up to like protect you, then I'm happy to be in it. But then if it's like, if we're talking about, oh, can I be a voice of the LGBTQIA community? No.
Yeah.
Like, you
well,
know?
I just feel like the queer community, we are stronger with our allies. We've got more voices. And we've got more opinions, and we've just got more pushing power.
What was the hardest episode to shoot?
Yeah, and the homeless episode was the hardest one.
Yeah,
because when I came out, I always thought there is a chance that my dad will kick me out, or something will go wrong, and I will end up on the street, or I'll end up just sofa surfing or trying to figure myself out, because. Although I look back at it now and I think that never would have happened in reality, you just don't know before you come out what the reaction will be.
I'm sure that's a fear of a lot of people as well.
Oh, yeah, loads. So then when I got the chance to do that documentary, I was, you know, being brought to different parts of the country to meet these guys and girls who had been through just that. And it was heartbreaking because you're looking at this guy, Damien, for instance, in Birmingham, who's been homeless for 8 years and...
The guy on the street that you interviewed? Yeah.
He had his sleeping bag set on fire. He's been attacked. He's had all sorts of different illnesses and different conditions because of the cold. And he's got such an amazing personality. Mm. He's so warm. He doesn't feel sorry for himself. He goes, well, if I'm not going to be happy, then what's the point in even being here?
Mm.
I could be in that puddle there and I'd still find a way to make people laugh, was his exact words. And it just sort of grounds you and it makes you feel like, wow, you know, we are so lucky. But also I felt sad for like what he could have been or could have achieved if he had been as lucky as me with his parents.
Yeah.
Mm. And the other people I met, it was just really, really like, it jolted me because you live in this London gay bubble and everything's A-okay and fine, you know. You can walk down Soho walking, holding hands with a fella and kissing kissing them, doing whatever you want, really, and everything's fine. But in other parts of the country, it's not always like that.
Can I ask how you found people to be? I've always wondered how people find the people to be on documentaries, because I know you mentioned that some of the people who took part were your friends or people that you knew. But then when it comes to finding a gay homeless man that you'd love to speak to,
isn't that like the power of the BBC research team?
Yeah.
Is it? Really?
It is. I mean, like, this is why a show like Queer Britain really can't be done like we make YouTube. It needs people power. And a lot of people working day and night.
It also needs, like, the name of the BBC power as well.
Because people trust that name. They know that the programme is going to be, you know, balanced and unbiased, and it's going to be truthful and not exploitative.
Yeah.
Because they really are the key things when it comes to making documentaries from the BBC. Even my questioning has to be, you know, I can't try
Oh, my goodness, because you interviewed some interesting people whose views that, you know, like, we completely disagree with, but you, like, held your cool, or at least the way that they edited it together made you look like a reasonable
person. I think the one we are talking about, someone who is called a potato queen.
I was literally about to mention that, because your face as you shut the laptop after having Skyped him and you put your head in your hands, and I know you would have said something after that, but that was cut.
Yeah.
Like, I could just tell you would have turned to the production team.
Oh, there was a piece to goodness, camera.
I feel completely objectified.
But I think
it was that guy, and then it was also the guy that the conversion therapy as well.
I said to the crew when we started, I said I would like to interview as many people as possible that have opposing views to me, and views that are a little bit out there, a little bit different, and maybe a little bit like more right. And I, not right as in correct, right as in right wing. And I was pleasantly surprised by who they found, and also shocked. And the thing is, in the documentary, my role is to try and get the most out of the person and give them a platform to speak whatever they want to say. It's not actually to challenge that view. They're just given a sounding board. If it was more of an investigative journalistic sort of, like, we're going to hunt down the bad politician type documentary, then maybe I could be a little bit more Newsnight about it.
Oh my God, you getting your Jeremy Paxman.
Yeah. But it was a tonal thing. And, you know, there were a couple of lines that were said after those interviews by me, where I basically just gave my own opinion on what they said. And, you know, I think we just thought that they didn't really add to what the people were saying.
Because I felt like they say it all themselves, and the viewer is going to, like, come to their own conclusion.
This is it.
And especially when you've got, like, the real life stories of all of the queer people who, you know, their opinions, like, affect.
Yeah.
Then you kind of can see, I don't know, I think people would come to the right conclusion from seeing what they
think. The main thing in the documentary is to just have visibility of both sides. And like you said, let the viewer make their own decision. You know, if someone's watching Queer Britain, they're watching it because something about it perked their ear. They were like, what's all this about? And I don't think you're going to convince anyone. I don't think you're going to convince anyone to feel a certain way just by how I interact with them. But I'll just say about that guy, Alexander, the potato queen.
Yeah.
So
explain what a potato queen is for our listeners first.
And the situation in which you are speaking to a self-identified potato queen.
Yeah. So the episode that he appears in is the racism one, episode 4, I think. And he is an Asian man who will only have sex with and date white men. And that makes him, in his own words, a potato queen. And he's written a book about being a potato queen.
Oh, I didn't realise he'd written a book.
Yeah, The True Confessions of the True Life of a Potato Queen, which is how he was found for the documentary. And I initially thought it meant that he had a fetish for Irish guys.
That's what I thought when you said
that. Which is pretty legit, you know. So we began talking, and pretty much straight away, when I started the call with him, I'm a white man, he goes, "Oh, you're gorgeous." And I knew it was because I was white and I was a gay man. And
I felt so uncomfortable, and he was just like, "Well, it's because I fancy them because the white race is superior." And I was just like, "Ah!"
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, no, when I heard that, I was like, wow. He actually said it. He said that. And yeah, it was...
Go on, Lena. You're just like,
this one time I dated a boy
who was a white Asian supremacist.
And he would only date white girls. But he said it was because apparently there's a thing, I don't know whether we should cut this out because I don't know how true it is. He said there's a scientifically proven thing where people who are in minority backgrounds in predominantly white societies associate people of their own race with their family, so they're not attracted to them.
No.
He was a fuckboy there, didn't we? Remember when I dated him?
So I think it's about beauty standards, and it's about white Caucasian being like the ideal beauty. It's why there's so much like
I'm not saying
surgery
not
in Asia in terms of like getting your nose done to look more white or your eyelids
but
done.
Even
to make
if
it
you
look
at
white.
Alexander, who I interviewed, he had contoured his face to make it look more Caucasian, heavily contoured his face, and he was, you know, he really held white people up there as superior. And what was cut out of the interview, just for timing's sake, was he went on and on about why Asians are inferior.
Aww,
yeah, geez. and why other races as well, not only his own. And it was a bizarre thing that to talk to horrible. Someone who was like self-hating in a way.
Yeah.
And I challenged him on it. I said, okay, so like, just tell me why you think we're superior. And then he was talking about inventions and the development of language and all these things, and it was just...
The Chinese invented the printing press before the Europeans did.
Yeah, and like the Middle East, was it in Iraq that the language and the wheel were invented?
And mathematics.
Mathematics is an Arabic thing.
So there you go.
Basically, what we've done is a jet engine, and we didn't even do that very well.
And most of the things that the whites made...
We did guns, because that's how we colonised.
We did guns. Okay, great. We did guns. And steam engines.
Yeah.
But yeah, so yeah. That was very interesting. And I've always wanted to be put in situations. I love awkward moments. If you look at my YouTube channel, Mom Reads Son's Grinder Messages or Me Calling My Childhood Bully, I live for awkward. I don't know why.
You get satisfaction out of that because I would never put myself in a position in a million years where I'd do something that made
I get tingles all over, Lucy. I don't know what it is. When I'm in that situation, even sometimes on the street, I'll just say something to someone and then I'll just let the silence.
You're so weird.
Yeah. You know.
So my dad described me as a frog kisser because I'll go into lots of conversations to try and find the best one. I'd imagine you're kind of similar in terms of you try and talk to like, or try and like pull out the good stuff out of all.
Are you talking about in parties?
Yeah. Like in a party situation, or if you're on the street and you're like,
you're impossible to track down at parties.
I know. I'm a floater.
Yeah.
But I've always been a floater, like even in school.
Lucy just thought of poo.
I know. We can tell.
Sorry. I'm back.
But you know, I think being a floater has being one of those people has molded me into what I do now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
What I want to continue doing, which is documentaries and making television programs, because I just love talking to people. I love asking questions. And when I do get bored of a group of people, I move on.
Yeah.
And I would always wonder why do the popular kids always hang out together and never anyone else? Or why do the hipster kids, why do the gay or the goth kids always just group together? And I was always going from one to the next, which was good in one way because I had a lot of sort of surface level friends, but I had very, very few best friends.
Sure.
Yeah. I actually had none until I was a bit older. So that was, difficult, but I'm not complaining about it. It gave me a career.
Yeah, you're like, nailed it.
What were, did you have any expectations going in making something that was for TV, essentially, rather than for YouTube? Like, was there anything you expected to be different and, like...
Yeah.
Anything that you could control that you wanted to control?
Or yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh. It's weird, like, giving it over to a whole team, isn't it?
It is, because when you're on YouTube, you make the concept, you are the on-screen talent, you're the editor, you're the marketer, you're everything. Mm. And all of a sudden, I was just the presenter. That's it. The great thing about that was that for the first time in my life, I could focus 100% on just being a great inquisitor and really just like connecting with the interviewee on a level where I didn't have to think about the sound or the light or anything else. Mm-hmm. And that made me a better interviewer, I think.
I think a lot of the good moments in Quibbritton come out when you really like connect with
the person
that's there, and yeah. they, you know, you make them feel comfortable and they trust you enough to like share all of this stuff about them. Yeah.
But you know what I find the best trick is to do, like if anyone's listening and they want to get into TV or any interviewee type stuff, when your person, your subject arrives, or when you meet them, the moment that you meet them, from that moment forward, like you are engaged, you are fully there with them. Nothing else matters apart from you and them.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen interviewers go into situations where they'll just turn it on when the camera goes on, then they'll turn it off when the camera goes off. If you want the person to be on side with you when the camera's on, you've got to get their trust before the camera's even set up.
Because they're themselves the whole time, aren't they? It's not their job.
This is it. They're there. Yeah. They've never been on camera. They're nervous. But they're also going to be talking about something hugely personal. So I usually go in and I have a really deep and meaningful conversation with them. I usually give a part of myself to them.
Yeah.
Say we're talking about a body image subject, like a guy, Rye, who has bulimia. I talk to him about my own body image issues and I don't like my stretch marks and I don't like my little belly and I don't like this and that the other, so that I'm no longer this authoritative figure, this BBC presenter.
Humanises you.
I'm just a guy who is here to talk with you, have a chat.
Mm.
And then when you're on camera, it almost turns into a therapy session between both of you, and you're both getting something out of it, and by the end of it you're knackered, but you're really, really, like, you feel buzzed, you feel like you're floating. Yeah. But yeah, the great thing about having the show was that there was a crew there and they were making it look pretty, and they did all their own jobs.
Yeah.
The hard part was that the edit, I had no control of the edit, and when you're used to, I'm going to edit that out because I don't like my face at that angle, or I'm going to turn the saturation down because my face looks a bit pink, or I'm going to, you can't make yourself look pretty or sound good, you just are what they
make you.
Yeah.
And also the tone as well, whilst as much as you can trust the team of people and the fact that you've pitched it, I assume, and you've...
It was a collaborative thing. It actually was their idea, but we came up with the episodes together.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So you've got so much trust in a team.
I want to talk about the porn episode.
Oh. I was dying for you to watch the porn one because you're Hannah Witten, obviously.
Yeah.
What did you think of it?
I thought it was... I think because... So I went to a porn set in Barcelona.
Yes.
I went to porn school
when I was 16 years old. No. And so I was really interested to see who the BBC had gotten for you.
Yeah.
And if it was any different to the kind of porn that I was seeing getting made. So different.
Right.
The porn that you saw was very
amateur.
Yeah. Very amateur. It was just like one guy, like, we could film it right now with the setup that I have here. We could just
pause the recording.
I know why men are weirded out when they walk in my room and they see like my camera and my light and my microphone.
Oh, I get that all the time. If I bring a guy back for like a little kiss and a cuddle,
whereas
they're like, why is your SLR and
I'm like, just don't worry about it.
But like the Erica Lust shoot that I went to was. You take the sex out, it was like an indie film production.
Yeah.
Because the amount of people that were there. High budget. Well, not high budget, it was indie budget. But yeah. Because, I don't know, the stuff that... what was his name? George. The stuff that George...
Young Hung Brit.
Is there a paywall for that? Or is it on free porn sites with adverts? Do you know?
It's both.
Oh, okay.
So I think
because Erica Lust stuff is like only behind a paywall, right. Like it's expensive.
A lot of his stuff is on XTube. That's where he found his fame.
Yeah,
and he has grown it there. And certain films of his you have to pay for.
Mm-hmm. The boys looked so young as well.
Yeah, You see, what we were trying to show is that shoot in particular that you're talking about is the chav porn shoot. And chav porn...
I love that there's a niche for chav porn.
Yeah. So chav porn is this...
Yeah. Gay men that love seeing kind of like chavvy boys.
So I had to dress up. To be on this porn shoot, I had to dress up as a chav in a tracksuit and have a little cap on and... Yeah,
is that problematic in some way as like a
class fetish?
Yeah,
surely.
The class fetish.
Well, I'm sure Owen Jones has something to say.
Well, George so had George, who makes these films, sort of like sort of described why he does it very well. He was like, I grew up in a working class area, and a lot of the guys were, you know, a little bit more rough around the edges, and they'd be spitting and they'd be saying, "Oh fuck you," and all this, and you'd almost be afraid of them as a young gay guy. But then it becomes a fetish as you find your sexuality and you find yourself. And that's why a lot of gay men fantasize about this like super hyper masculine, rough young guy. And that's what he's making. So he's dressing up his porn stars.
There's a demand for it. So you give the people what they want.
His lens is from that background as well. Then okay.
Yeah, it's definitely something you could talk about all day and all night.
What did you think of it? Because in the episode you were like, that's not what I expected, I don't feel good.
Yeah, it was really, really weird to be in the room while a gangbang was happening. Like, and not only was I watching it, but as you saw, George gave me the camera and I had to direct part of the porn shoot. As I was holding the camera, I was inches away from the action. You know, there were noises, there were smells, there was all... a lot of humidity in the room, and I was saying, you know, telling them, you know, what they should do next creatively. And it was the most unsexy thing that I ever could have been involved in, because for me, sex for me is a very personal thing. I've never had sex with anything more than one person at a time.
Anything.
but I, you know, I'm very kind of like traditional in that sense.
Yeah.
And this was, you know, this is a gangbang happening before me. I can see why it is sexy for a lot of people. But what I did get out of it and what I learned from it was that this is not just porn in order to make people feel horny and to get them off. But for the performers, it's an outlet for them to feel sexy and to feel wanted and to feel the things that they can't normally feel when they're out and about.
Like, and to get paid.
And they get paid. a couple of the guys said, you know, when they go out to nightclubs, they aren't seen as attractive. They don't get any attention. But when they do their porn, they become a star. And their online following grows and it gives them a boost. Now, obviously, there's a question in there. Is that a healthy way to get your boost or not? But we're just telling the story. Or the other person, the story that really, really touched me was Cookie Pup.
Yes!
So Cookie Pup is a trans cam star.
Yeah.
And a cam star is someone who sets up a webcam in their bedroom and performs live. It's not recorded or edited, it's happening in the moment. And she can have anywhere from 300 to 500 people watching her live, tipping her and paying her. And the money that they pay means that she'll do different things for
them. Yeah, so there's like different goals. Like once she reaches a certain amount, then like she'll do something.
She'll
use
the
dildo. Beautiful thing about it is that like in the comments of her stream, there'd be people being like, I'm scared, but I'm trans and I'm scared about coming out. Like, do you have any advice? And so it was like a therapy session as well as like a little bit of titillation.
And she's an activist, you know?
Yeah.
And she's an adult performer and an activist in one. And she said it herself that the thing that she loves about what she does is that she's created this online community of trans people who fancy her, but also learn from her and see her as an idol. There's a whole other side to it that I never expected to see.
Yeah.
Although I wasn't turned on by what I saw, I was inspired in a way by what I saw.
Yeah. No, fair enough.
It was a funny one, though. It was a funny one to do.
Yeah.
I can imagine.
I was turned on when I watched them filming.
Yeah. Really?
Oh,
the boys?
No, not in Queer Britain. The Erica.
Oh, sorry.
Lost shoot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But it was a very different experience because it wasn't... Erica, as the director, wasn't hands-on. She kind of was just like, this is what's going to happen in the scene. And then they just started having sex, knowing kind of where the scene was going to go. And then there was absolute silence on set. There was no like, oh, can you do this and do this and do this? It was literally...
Oh, very natural.
It was just like, we were just watching two people having like a sex session with just a camera just like moving around them, but not actually intruding, more like observing. So that's what I thought was kind of cool.
Because I went to a, you know, Davey Wavy, the YouTuber? Yeah. I went to a porn shoot with him in Barcelona a few weeks ago for men.com, which is a massive, massive studio. You know, they weren't in Queer Britain. So this was the other side. I'd been on an amateur shoot, then I'd been on a professional shoot. And the differences are vast.
Yeah.
It is like being on a sitcom set. The equipment is the same. It's big. I think men.com, their shoot was a little bit more, you know, planned out. There was a storyline to it and there was a lot of starting and stopping. But just like that, I couldn't stay any longer than 20 minutes before I just was like, I gotta get out of here.
And masturbate?
No.
Oh, you just didn't like it?
No.
Oh, well. I was the other way around. I'm like, I need to leave.
Because you need to touch yourself. Did you go back and touch yourself?
I was with Melanie. We like were planning to, but we didn't. No, we didn't touch each other.
Okay.
No.
Just checking.
But we did.
Bang your book club exclusive. Yeah.
Banging.
But we did get given matching sex toys. But anyway.
The reaction to it.
Yeah.
Because usually you're used to seeing people's comments like straight away. You upload something and then you're like, oh, okay, this is how people are reacting to it. Like, one, you had to wait a really long time before anybody in public saw it. How did that feel?
Have you been mad following the hashtag?
I have. I have to be honest, I have. Because it was such a passion project. These are like my babies.
Yeah.
And
all six of them.
Yeah, all six of my little babies. And they're all out there now. And you do feel that it's this real, like, you know, fatherhood, like a maternal sort of, like, I'm going to protect these.
Yeah, and don't say anything bad about them, I'll come for you.
The way it is, when you make something with a national public service broadcaster and it's on a contentious issue, and you're talking on behalf of people about something so close to their heart, their sexuality, their gender identity, you're going to get a lot of hate as well as
a lot of love.
There's been a bit. There has been a bit of you know, people saying, why did you call it Queer Britain? I hate that word. Stop calling it. Stop saying it. Stop saying
Have
it.
Have they seen the last episode?
That's how I tweet now. And I'm like, I would like you to maybe watch the last episode and you might understand why the word is actually now been reclaimed and it's actually a positive thing. You don't have to identify as it, but it's got a purpose. But also I've got to have my TV presenter head on now and not respond to everything, because you know, you on YouTube, you're like, we said, you're your own boss.
You can
have, you can do what you want,
people, you can...
but I've got to be, you know, careful.
You can't
and
really have arguments based on it, like, on behalf of the BBC.
But a lot of the time as well, this isn't my project, this is the BBC's thing. I'm hired to be the presenter and in another case, I guess, the face of it. But that doesn't give me, like, speaking rights. I can only say what I feel, and that is, I think it's great. I am really happy with it. I wish I had it when I was a kid. I can't imagine the good that this would have done for me when I was a young, closeted boy. And I'm so happy that they have decided to put it on YouTube as well, because this is something that an international audience can benefit from. You know, usually these shows only live on iPlayer or they get broadcast once and then that's that. But this is going to be there forever. And a lot of my audience are overseas, and I think that's why they decided to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the feedback has been great. It has. It's been 98% fantastic.
And that's good.
I couldn't ask for anything more than that. And the crew are over the moon and we're talking about new ideas and... we don't know what's coming next, but...
exciting!
We'll see.
Any last questions, ladies? Any last statements?
Any last statements? Man? Thanks for having me, lady. Lady.
It's cool.
It was
fun. Bangered.
I feel like I've been banged.
Oh, great. Yeah. Oh, that's what... That should be a thing.
I've been banged.
When we have guests on, we're like, you've been banged.
You've been banged! If you want to watch Queer Britain and you're in the UK, go to BBC iPlayer. It's going to be there for a year. If you're not in the UK, head over to the BBC Three YouTube channel and all six episodes are ready for you to watch.
Ding, 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 ding.
So exciting.
Thanks so much for chatting with us, Riyadh.
Yeah.
You should also read Aristotle and Dante.
I want to.
Yeah.
Oh, I think you'd love it.
Really? Do you know another book that I've just came across, which I think sounds similar to this, is called Simon versus the Homo Sapiens Agenda.
Yeah, I've got
that's
that.
Meant to be really, really good.
And they're just making a movie about it now, and I was on set in Atlanta, so it comes out next year, and it's going to be totes emosh.
Totes emosh.
Yeah.
Thank you, bangers, for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes and rate, review, How does podcasting work? We've been doing this for a year and a half and we're still just bad at it.
Write us some really nice reviews on iTunes, please. That would be great.
Yeah.
And our next episode is going to be on The Game.
The Game by Neil Strauss. We're actually recording it right after this. So.
I actually think I hate it more than Men Are From Mars, which I never thought would happen. Like John Gray's like basically my dream date compared to this guy.
He's an absolute hero. Yeah, don't forget to look out for that, which will be out on the 27th of June. And go follow us on Twitter, at Banging Book Club. Where can people find you, Riyad?
On the internet.
At Riyad K.
Yeah, at Riyad K on everything, and that's R-I-Y-A-D-H-K.
If you didn't understand his accent.
You'd be such a good tune.
It's so funny you said that. As a child, or even now, what am I saying? It is my dream to be the train guy or girl.
How do you get into that? Do you start at like, please take your items from the bagging area? And then like when you, how does a career progress through that?
I don't know. Like, what do you do next? This is a Northern Line train from Morden via Bank.
Yay!
Did it!
Nailed it. Okay. Thank you guys so much for listening and we'll see you soon. Bye!
Bye!
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.